Grab your travel bags and teleporters, folks, because we're taking a trip to sunny Western New York in this episode of TMNT. I'm Dan.
And I'm Brian.
And this is Season 2, Episode 13 of TMNT, Return of the Technodrome. Michael Reeves shows a truly bizarre understanding of New York geography.
You just cut out, like, half of my script, dude. It's just, like, breaking down how much sense this does not logically make. But it's still a really fun episode. Originally aired on Christmas Eve, 1988. This is the Season 2 finale, our 18th episode as a podcast, the 13th episode of Season 2, which was the first half order for the network. Just looking down the barrel of the gun here. Season 1, 5 episodes. Season 2, 13 episodes. Dan, can you tell me how many episodes you think Season 3 is going to contain?
Why, Brian, it's 47.
It's 47 fucking episodes because there was an immediate demand for massive syndication due to all the success of Season 1 and Season 2 and how much you, me, and all of our peers begged our parents to go buy toys.
Yep.
So what we have to look forward to is more jank because, unfortunately, they had to rush Season 3 out the door with just the exact same amount of time for production that they had for Season 2 and Season 1. So this is a window to the future, and we will touch on a lot of the chinks in the armor. Is that still a PC term? Probably not.
I think if you use it in specifically that term, it's okay. But any other time, no.
Fair enough. So anyways, to recount, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original animated series produced by Fred Wolf on CBS television, has had a grand total of 193 episodes, and we have 174 left. Cheers.
Here we go.
Let's kick shell.
You mentioned it. Michael Reeves brings us all the way home. I just want to say, before we even get into the plot of this story, that there have been a lot of returns in this series so far. We've got Return of the Shredder. Return of the Technodrome. And all I got to say to that is winners get things done right the first time.
Well, I think it's funny that there's like there's a motif with the Ninja Turtles of the return. That's a big term to use in Ninja Turtles canon, and whether it's Return to New York or Return of the Shredder or
it's time to go back.
We have a lot of returns.
That's true. It does kind of branch well beyond this series. The return of, though, is such an alignment with the horror movie roots that we've been talking about with the writers and producers of the Ninja Turtles cartoon. So, like, it's Return of the Bog Monster, Return of Godzilla, that kind of thing. And it totally appeals to that. But, I mean, it's a vanilla enough motif, like you said, that it works in a lot of places. But yeah, I just wanted to point that out
for sure.
We open our episode in Channel 6 in the news bullpen. April's at a desk working at a computer that looks less like a Jetsons reject this time around, but not by much. Irma's doing her usual nosy shtick, asking about the turtles. And now back up. April used to have an office. April had a corner office, if I remember correctly, by the end of Season 1. And let me just say, this is what happens when you let the sunglasses guy steal all your scoops, April.
Yeah, a real demotion there. I have to add in that I absolutely love the animation of her typing.
She's just kind of like karate chopping the keyboard.
Yeah, it's like keyboard cat, like chop, 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 chop.
Next up, Burns shows up and he says it's a slow news day. And then he says the most morally compromising thing I've ever heard in this show so far.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what good reporters do at times like these?
They go out and make news, which is what I suggest you do.
And like, seriously, dude, that's some Rupert Murdoch bullshit right there.
Yeah, that's got to be in like responsible journalism 101.
The term you use in this is find news. You go out hunting and see what local businesses are up to or if there is a protest happening or something like that. You don't make news. Like, what is April going to do? Go hold up a bank with a camera in her back pocket? It just makes me think of the James Bond movie, Tomorrow Never Dies, which like that's the central plot point is this like media magnate is going out and starting world wars so that he can film them for profit.
I kind of like the idea completely disproven, but we've brought this up a couple times, that there are moments in this show that are like sort of low key social commentary.
It's just it's an interesting perspective, though, from now in 2023 compared to 1988, how much that translates.
For sure.
Right. Like, you would think that maybe the world is a different place, but arguably it's worse.
Maybe the New York that the writers thought of then is the world we have now.
Okay. There is another subtle nod at, you know, the meme Simpsons did it first, right?
Yes. Yeah.
There, I'm going to come back to Turtles did it first a little bit later, but you just kind of expanded on that concept for me. Anyways, we have a little bit of character development for Irma in this scene, which I think is great, but then it never comes back to actually pay off. Like, okay, so we've always assumed that she's just like a lonely, sad, bored kind of spinster girl. Like, it's a cartoon. They're going to be stereotypes. Deal with it. April says to her, "The turtles aren't the most exciting thing in my life." And my response to that is, really? The confession of holding any semblance of relationship with a recently discovered and acknowledged species of anthropomorphic crime fighters living underneath one of the busiest populaces on the planet for a decade and a half, operating in secret and subtly influencing the socio-environmental development of the surrounding society, for better and worse, isn't the most exciting thing you could ever experience?
Got him.
What's more important? Huh? Hamilton tickets? Probably.
Yeah, I mean, that line is really funny because it is like a step beyond our typical thirsty Irma. Like, she's still yearning for excitement, but it's not from a partner right now. It's just that, like, she's now met the turtles and now she just wants to be around them and wants to see them. And April just gaslights her a lot.
But this entire episode gaslights her because they frame her as like, oh, April says they're not the most important thing in my life. And Irma responds with, but they certainly are in mine. And like, for one, aw. For two, we knew this, but actually, this makes me kind of sad.
Yeah.
But also, we never see Irma again in this episode. I thought that's a narrative setup for her to be like a central character in this.
Yep. And then April just goes to see the turtles immediately thereafter anyway.
Without Irma.
Yeah, absolutely. She's just like,
April's a bad friend.
Deny, and then head right to the turtles anyway.
We cut down to the sewer, and this is where I want to step back again and acknowledge that this is another one of those less than animated episodes.
It is.
Everyone's a little dumpy. The colors are a little wonky. Donatello's pink again.
Yep.
And there's some really obvious forced push-ins due to lack of coverage. So, like, there's close-ups blatantly pulled out of low-res wide shots just so that they can make a cut.
It is unfortunate to see this kind of quality. Everything looks a little bit washed out. Like you mentioned, Donnie's mask is like legitimately pink. Later on, we'll see Krang is like too red.
Yeah, a little bit dark. Like, you spent a little time in Florida vacationing.
Yeah, and then later on in the episode, since we're just kind of talking about animation now, there's a spot towards the end of the episode where the turtles' heads get like huge.
There are so many animation errors that we can recount through this.
The proportions are so off at different times. It's very odd. But I guess there were just, you know, the rush was already starting, and so the quality control dips a little bit in this episode.
Absolutely. That's what I was saying. This is a preview of things to come, for quality to come. So anyways, like, yeah, we can call out the animation errors now, and they're blatantly obvious, but did you really pay attention to any of this when you were a kid?
No, not at all.
So mission succeeded.
Yeah.
So the big plot point here in this episode is that our boys are going to be on their own. Splinter is going out of town for a retreat. He calls it 3 days of fasting and meditation. Vegas!
Well, he calls it a pilgrimage, which is an interesting choice of words when you're not going anywhere.
He goes somewhere for about 3 minutes.
Yeah. And don't worry, folks. We're going to talk about where he goes.
It's something near and dear to both of our hearts. Next up, we find Shredder operating out of a mansion, or like a dilapidated hotel that is closed for demolition, according to the sign on the front of it. As per usual, Krang's cucking him over the phone, but this time Rocksteady and Bebop are like in the background vibing on it. And Shredder just wants
one more chance. And Rocksteady says,
yeah, Krangy. Just one more chance, please.
Man, I don't even know where to start with this episode, which is not to say I didn't enjoy it. It's just that there's quite a few things. Even going back to the last scene, I just really want to call out a great line that Splinter had where the turtles are like, come on, you don't really have to go. And he's like, I don't have to. I choose to.
I hate being a dad.
This is such a great line to be like, fuck off.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we get Shredder begging Krang for another chance to take out the turtles. And it's like, dude, he's not even there. Why do you need his permission? Just go out and do it.
Shredder is so desperate for validation.
But it has to be done before the invasion, because the invasion can't wait any longer. Suddenly, for reasons.
Yeah, if the title didn't give this episode away, Krang is done with Shredder's bullshit and is preparing to bring the Technodrome back to Earth. And to do so, he needs an enormous amount of power. Okay, that makes sense.
Which is just like one of those things where, like, if you think about it, and we've known this, because the whole reason that Krang is like sending Shredder out there by himself is to be like, I'm not going to help you. You have to kill these turtles on your own. I'm not going to give you any help. But he literally could have brought the Technodrome back at any time.
Yeah, but he's too busy taking a shower.
Like, he's so ticked at Shredder for his failures, but he could have done this at any time, and he still waited 13 episodes.
It's like a weird boss-employee relationship where he's just, like, waiting for him to fuck up more and to fire him. So anyway, Shredder's homework now is to take over the hydroelectric plant in Niagara Falls. Hashtag Buffalove. Hashtag Go Bills. Hashtag Bills Mafia.
The Bills make me wanna shout!
And we're not making this up. Like, Krang specifically calls for him to use the hydroelectric station at Niagara Falls.
Yeah, verbatim. And you know what this means, though, right?
Quincy, we are going on a road trip! Woo! Yes! Absolutely!
Yeah, there we go.
Krang gives Shredder a new doohickey to make this plot work, and then I just need to cut in this Krang line because Pat Fraley's delivery is absolutely fucking bonkers in this. 3 minutes, 17 seconds. Here you go.
Meanwhile, I will move the Technodrome to the proper space-time coordinates. Krang out!
Dude, that line was ridiculous. Like, I think he swallowed part of his esophagus to pull that off.
And the smile at the end, too. Like, man, the animation in this episode isn't great, but they nailed it there.
There's a few moments that really do stand out, and they're pretty much all Krang. Shredder and company are off like a prom dress, and then Krang mean mugs for the camera, and it's legit kind of metal. He says, to your battle stations. So we cut to Niagara Falls.
Yeah, I can't, like, cut past this part. He and Bebop and Rocksteady, they leave the hideout where they're in with him saying, don't just stand there, you mutant morons. We must hurry to Niagara Falls, which is 6.5 hours away from Manhattan.
Oh, there's math coming. There's math coming, Dan. We'll look at the math of how this episode doesn't fucking work in the least. So can you hear the air quotes in Niagara Falls, though? Because I think the animation team has absolutely no idea that there are plural.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there's just a single fall.
Nothing what it looks like in real life at all. Like, this looks like something that Dwayne The Rock Johnson would fall over in a canoe or something in a movie.
Yeah, also, like, I'm really convinced that Michael Reeves, the writer of this fantastic episode, was convinced Niagara Falls was, like, in Central Park.
I thought he was assuming that it was in, like, a jungle.
Well, because, like, I'm not going to let this go. We're not going to let this go, folks. This is why you listen to us. They run out of the building, and they show up in Niagara Falls, like, minutes later. And if you're sitting there thinking, like, well, maybe it was just a time montage, and they skipped the time that it took to travel. No, because the scenes that we see with the turtles line up in the same amount of time, and they never left their sewer.
The turtles and Splinter.
And Splinter.
This entire timeline is fucked.
Oh, man. It's so bad. And you would think that if you were doing this kind of a plot point, that they would write in something like, oh, we're going to use our teleporter, or Krang will transport us there using the portals for the Technodrome. But nope. there is zero explanation for how Shredder, Bebop, and Rocksteady get to Niagara Falls in such a short amount of time. And we're talking literal minutes here.
This entire episode feels like it was meant to be split into a two-parter, like a full hour long, but it got so condensed and crunched into the season finale that the timeline doesn't line up even in the slightest.
Oh my God, the pace is like lightning in this episode.
On that note, Shredder and company, they bust into the hydroelectric station very slowly and methodically, and they say nothing. There's no verbal exchange. There's no get down. There's no we're taking over. There's no stick 'em up. There's no
any of you fucking pricks move, and I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you.
No, they just run in with guns and everyone complies immediately.
Yeah, no questions asked. No resistance. Just like okay, you got it, and just like that. The portal drainer doohickey that Shredder's got opens up a portal and boom goes the dynamite.
Yeah, I think he called it the polarity diverter.
It doesn't matter.
No, the polarity deflector. There we go. That's what it's called.
It never matters.
For once, you've done something right.
All right, next scene. Nighttime.
Big Apple, 3 a.m.
Outside a sewer pipe, a la Super Mario. So the turtles are all on their cheapskates. And I got to be honest, during the prior setup, in the lair, when they're talking to Splinter about him going out on his pilgrimage, it looked like Splinter was going to take the one singular cheapskate that was hanging out in the lair with them. And I was so excited for a second. It's like, because that's super big dad energy right
there. Oh my God.
Just take off on your son's skateboard.
I would have loved that. I also thought that that's what was going to happen. He was just going to hop on it and skate away.
That would have been so much better. But instead, he just kind of walks off into the sunset and Michelangelo says,
yeah, stay loose. Boy, goodbyes are really tough for me.
I'm going to adopt that. That's what I'm going to say to say goodbye to everybody in my life now.
Oh man, it's so lame.
All right, so Leo wants him to go back into the city in case Shredder is up to anything. And the second, they turn around.
Fellas, we've got serious problems.
April's on the horn and the city is in blackout. I don't know about you, but I suspect the Shredder.
Oh man, and there's so much here with Leo taking on the role of Splinter. And they lampshade it, the whole thing with like Splinter's away. Mikey is so impressed that Leo did the quote unquote same psychic bit. And Leo says, with him away, someone has to do it. And it's like, God, this is only season two. And you're already lampshading all of this different stuff that you've done in 18 episodes.
It's lampshading here, but it absolutely could have been a great thing for them to kind of explore and actually build Leo's characterization beyond suicidal kamikaze like warrior.
Yeah, absolutely. Except for the fact that like none of this is any prescient ability by either Splinter or Leo. Shredder and Krang are the only bad guys who do anything in New York City. They've given up whole swaths of the city to the cyber gang, and they all they do is drive around and scream all day. It's obviously Shredder.
Yeah, the only other villain that you've ever encountered is Baxter Stockman, and you just assume he's dead at this point. Yeah, Leo, I can sense it. All right, if Niagara Falls is out, not only is New York City down, even with if they took out one of the two hydroelectric plants up there, then like the entire state of New York and part of Ontario, Canada is dark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's like they came up with an idea and didn't realize that what they came up with was actually considerably worse than what they expected.
Yo, those plants, I researched this. The hydroelectric plants combined in Niagara Falls produce 2.6 million kilowatts. And like that's just, it's just like a native Manhattanite to only be concerned with downstate.
Except Reeves doesn't even know that Niagara Falls isn't in Manhattan.
Like allegedly, because yeah, it kind of feels like everybody just kind of walks there. Hey, sidebar, just another observation here. We've made jokes about Shredder's kickstand and the pop socket and all that stuff on the phone. But like, for real, there were some really innovative technological advancements made in this show. So like, let's recount. It's 1988. Cell phones do exist and they just mobile phones, car phones, whatever. They all look like something you could bludgeon somebody with, right?
Yeah, huge.
The turtle comms fit in your pocket, and they come in two modes. If you've noticed, there's a flip phone version and a slide phone version, like a sidekick. Like, bro, that's some serious advancement here. That's some serious tech foresight.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a few steps below Star Trek innovations.
And video calls, which I guess is more like of a Dick Tracy thing that they just adapted, but still.
I mean, a lot of people have different versions of it, but honestly, if you look around, the most common version is somebody propping their mobile phone up on a pop socket and taking a call. Short of, you know, anybody who's got a built-in webcam in their laptop and stuff like that. In this post-pandemic world we live in, where video calls are very prominent in a lot of industries, it's so funny to kind of look back at 1988 and see this bit of technology just in the cell phone mode, you know? Again, the flip phone versus the slide phone, that's bizarre and radical.
I think you and I have talked about this not on the show before, but how we both wish that there was a turtle comm phone.
Oh, absolutely. I'd buy that in a heartbeat.
Like, how is that not a model somewhere already? Someone 3D print me a case for my phone.
Who do we have to yell at? Do we have to, like, is it straight to Apple, or are we like...
I mean, it's got to be like Viacom has to have some partner with the cell phone company, right?
Yeah, if anybody's out there listening, Playmates, NECA, whatever, make us a case, okay?
Like, I had the TurtleCom toy when I was a kid. I loved that thing.
The little SOS machine that was just a beeper?
Yeah, exactly. But it had, like, the images that you could flip through to be like, oh, I'm talking to this turtle, or I'm talking to April or Splinter.
Which had no impact on how the thing operated, but it was kind of like having a collector card, like a Magic the Gathering card.
Well, it didn't change how it was operated, but there were... Each card had different dots so that you could do different Morse code for that character.
Oh, that's right. They did have different, like, menus of what you could say to so-and-so. Like, April had different messages you could convey, like an SOS, and I'm sure you could spell out pizza on Mikey's card or something like that. It actually, like, that's how I learned some Morse code. And for what it's worth, like, I had neighbors across the street from me, and we did the whole, like, tin can phone thing. And even had, like, occasionally we learned some Morse code, so we would flash with flashlights and stuff because we were those kids. Anyways, we're at 5 minutes and 2 seconds into this episode, and Michelangelo and Leonardo look super duper fat. That's the only note I have.
At 5 minutes. Oh, yeah, yeah. They look very chunky here.
Cutting to Dimension X, the portals are working, and Krang says... The capacitors are charging.
Sure.
Fuck you. Fuck you, Krang. As an electrician, I will touch on this later. Krang is still mean mugging the camera at this point, but I really appreciate that also his android body has the derpiest smile on.
You got to look at that face every now and then.
It's hard not to, because I mean, all the action's happening in the belly area. But yeah, like, the payoff is if you're watching the android's independent movements and gestures without Krang in the frame, it's way better. Krang says he's sending a contingent of foot and rock soldiers to assist Shredder because he obviously still doesn't trust him. Also notice that as soon as the Shredder hangs up the phone to receive his soldiers through the portals, the first thing he does is immediately call Krang back.
Oh yeah.
Pathetic.
Just to let him know I got him. I just wanted you to know that I got your package.
Dude, the desperation is so palatable. In the next scene, the Ninja Turtles and April are trying to tune one of their turtle cons to listen in on Shredder and Krang to find out if they're responsible for this New York City blackout. We got another animation error here. Donnie's wristbands disappear a few times.
Oh, yeah.
And this should be minor, but like... When you're really used to those character designs, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, well, especially because they keep coming back. Like, he holds up his phone sometimes, the bandana's there, the wrist guard there, and then other times it's not. Most of the scene it's not, actually.
It's just funny, like, a lot of the turtle designs in the comics and the movies and stuff don't necessarily have wristbands, like 1990 does, but I feel like Rise didn't? I don't know. As the turtle designs have varied over the years, the wristbands have kind of come and gone. But as far as 87, they always have elbow pads, knee pads, wrist pads, right?
Yeah.
So it really does. It feels really unnatural when you don't see that. Kind of harkens back to our conversation from previous weeks about like cartoon characters' costume design changes and how much it throws you off.
I also really like that the turtle comm could be tuned to different frequencies.
I mean, it operates more like a walkie-talkie at that point, less like a cell phone.
Yeah, it's a nice little, like, also, like, bit for Donnie, right? Like, oh, he made these. Of course, he could fiddle with it and change the frequency on it so that he could tune into something else. Like, I don't know. It's a nice character beat in an episode that doesn't really have a lot of those.
I really didn't think of it as a character beat, but you're kind of right. That's another bit of foresight from Donatello and his technology development where you don't immediately credit to him. But as we look at it 30 years in the future, yeah, thanks, Donnie. That was a really smart move. Our heroes immediately know the villain's plan, obviously, and they have no plan of their own to execute. But we get a battle cry from Leonardo, some sarcasm from Raph, and here we go.
So I finished that scene and I was like, so are April and the Turtles going to run to Niagara Falls too? And we immediately get the answer. No, they're, of course, taking the turtle blimp just to continue the theme of season two of the blimp being in like every episode when I thought it would be the party wagon.
Yeah. And they're all just kind of sitting on it, including April. No seatbelts. I would not be cool with this. And then another really glaring animation error. The top of Leo's scalp disappears for a few frames.
It's like 6:59, 7. No, it's 7:04 is when it happens.
We check in on Splinter. He's been gone all of 2 minutes, and he senses great danger south of here. So I guess that means he's going to book it home from what? New Jersey? Poughkeepsie?
Dude, this really got me. I wish that at some point in the future of this show, I'll print some versions of my notes so that our audience could see it. Because occasionally I just go into all caps. And this is one of the moments because, yeah, he says, I sense great danger approaching somewhere to the south of here. But everything's happening in Niagara Falls. So is he in Canada? Did he get to Canada in 3 minutes? What the hell is going on here?
Everything is south of you, Splinter. Everything that's relevant to this plot is south of you, Splinter.
But it shouldn't be. He just walked into the woods.
You get mad that he's not far away, and we'll talk more about that. But I'm mad that he immediately says, I'm not on vacation anymore. Like, it would have been a better episode if it was actually about the turtles standing on their own without Dad to back them up.
I'm just stuck on location, on geography. This is so glaringly, like, I get that, like, you know what? Not every kid who watched the show is in New York. And so there's probably a lot of kids around the nation who didn't know how far away Niagara Falls is from New York City. But I know.
Let me just say, I think it's very exciting that the Turtles venture beyond New York City. I have no problem with that whatsoever. I'm especially excited that they're coming to an area that I grew up in and I'm familiar with. But let's look at the numbers. The blimp limps its way into Niagara Falls. Again, air quotes. And okay, it's 396 miles from New York City to Niagara Falls. The average speed of a blimp that they are riding in of that size and caliber is roughly 35 miles an hour in ideal conditions, no wind. So it's going to take them at least just shy of 12 hours to get up there. Would the van have not been a better option here, Leonardo?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyways, one shot takes them out from Bebop, and they come plummeting out of the sky on the little glider thing that's supposed to navigate the entire blimp. And they land in the river, and they're going to go over the falls and the remnant of the cockpit, and we'll be right back after this message from Playmates.
The turtles are assaulting the Technodrome! Insider the Foot Clan prep and storage chamber, Krang's laboratory, and Shredder's master control room!
Huh? Turtles?
Oh, they've been spotted! Now they'll have to watch out for the iSpy radar, that hidden ooze pit, the spike back door!
Turtle soup time!
Oh no, an ooze scanner, a brain scrambler, and mutant manacles! Can Leonardo rescue them?
Sure hope so!
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles!
From Playmates!
And we're back.
Okay, this is our this is our the turtles are the worst ninjas moment of the episode, because they sail on into Niagara Falls where they know they're going to find Bebop, Rocksteady, and Shredder. And of course, Bebop immediately shoots down the turtle blimp because, duh, it's a blimp. It's clearly labeled, and it's the one sunny day in all of Western New York.
And it's the slowest moving object you could ever imagine as a target.
And Leo thinks they had a safe landing in the river, but they call it Niagara Falls for a reason, you dolt.
But Donnie's going to save the day by remote piloting the blimp down to them in the water so that they can climb up a rescue rope that is dispensed 2 seconds before they go over the falls. And hold on. Would the glider not have just glided off the falls? Wouldn't have been safer for them to just stay on the cockpit? It just seems like an unnecessarily complicated rescue plan.
Oh, yeah.
But also, if Donatello can remote pilot the blimp without the glider, i.e., as we know, the mode of propulsion for the balloon itself, then...
What does the glider do? It's just seats.
It's just like a lifeboat, I guess. So anyway, Splinter has just walked all the way to Niagara Falls at this point, which should have taken him upwards of a week, but old man's got spunk, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think he was just already in Toronto.
How? I'm not contesting the specifics. I'm contesting the logistics.
Oh, yeah. None of this makes sense, and it's infuriating. When he said, like, this is another one of those things that, like, in Splinter's scene when he's, like, detecting danger because he's omniscient, he could have just said, I sense a great danger approaching, and left it at fucking that. But no, he had to add in the extra line somewhere to the south of here to call in how ludicrous this geography is.
There's so much of that, though. Okay. Without giving away too much, this entire episode is a Star Wars allegory.
Yes.
And it's coming up quick. Shredder and Krang are getting closer and closer to bringing the Technodrome all the way through the portal, and the Ninja Turtles decide to stop the river so that they can stop the power feeding the portal. Raph says,
we'll just round up 50 million beavers and ask them to please build us a dam!
And Donnie's response is, nah, not bad. Donnie does not understand sarcasm, apparently.
Nope.
Also, his wristbands have continued to disappear and reappear through this entire episode so far, and do not stop here.
But he does have another plan.
He does have another plan as we crossfade out where the heroes huddle together in classic 80s, 90s trope. In the next scene, April straight up Irma's a foot soldier and rock soldier.
Yoo-hoo! Hi, fellas.
Yeah, I wanted to lampshade this myself here because, as we mentioned, Donnie's plan is to sneak into the plant to close off the tunnels that accept the river water that run the plant. And April's like, I have an idea as well. And her idea is to attempt to seduce a robot and a rock alien. And it works.
Of course it does. It's an ambush, though. Donatello clocks the rock soldier with his bow.
Surprise!
And it shakes into his core. And it made me think of that scene from Secret of the Ooge when he does the same thing to Toka.
Yeah.
And then a single footbot disarms Michelangelo. Yikes.
Very easily.
That was unexpected. That might be the first time a foot soldier actually demonstrated a threat to the heroes at all. One distraction from April and the baddies are knocked over a cliff and na 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 na.
Yeah, they like... She just comes out of a bush with her camera, which where was she holding that thing?
Also, why?
And I mean, well, because her whole thing is that she wants a story, sure, but
she doesn't turn it into one, though.
Nope, she doesn't do anything with it. And like, I get that once, I don't know, I feel like even a rock alien would have seen a camera before. Like, why did that really distract them?
Contrivance.
I guess maybe she's holding it and they think like, oh, maybe it's a weapon. It could be a rocket launcher or something. And then they just get drop kicked off a cliff.
I mean, it'd be kind of funny if she did hold it up like a pistol or something like that. And they all put their hands up or something. But she just like pops up with a camera because that's what Aprils do.
Especially funny because there's an April action figure where the camera transformed into a gun.
Why don't I remember this?
Yep, I had it. I remember that.
I had an April action figure, too, and I had her motorcycle, and she had a camera, but I don't remember it turning into a gun.
Pretty sure. Might have been one of the transforming ones later on, but.
Oh, okay.
Like, it wasn't the original figure.
No, not the straight up, like, plain yellow jumpsuit with, like, the orange accents, right?
Yeah, no, it was not that one.
Okay. All right, anyways, Michelangelo, April, and Donatello are facing off against some of the troops. Meanwhile, Raph and Leo are full-on assaulting the front door of the facility and facing off against Rocksteady. we got another distraction just so Splinter could pop up and pocket sand Rocksteady.
Yep, with his sleep spice.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I guess.
The sleep spice will wear off on someone of his size.
Our heroes advance and Donatello cuts the plant power by completely closing off the river water flow down to the riverbed and thereby ruining the entire Erie County ecosystem in the process.
Which is just a single button press.
That seems like a security fallacy.
Just a boop, no password, no hacking, just a single button.
River on, river off.
What's on? Mouth off.
But as they try to escape, Shredder cuts them off, and then Leo gets in one more suicidal battle cry. Then we'll go out with turtle honor! Fighting!
Yeah, dude, you got a problem.
Leonardo's a nihilist.
This is a thing that continues on in other iterations, but damn, Leo, you need therapy.
If he just listened to Raphael once in a while, he might lighten up a little bit because the response is, I'd rather go out for pizza.
Biting! Ugh.
Michael Reeves, you can do better.
I just love that Leo's defining characteristic is that either he really wants to die in battle or he has very little faith in him and his brothers.
They never explore it either. They never explore it.
Nope.
But we've hit the final showdown. The Technodrome is breaching the portal and shit is going down. We got the full foot and rock soldier armies. They're mobilized. It's four turtles, a rat, and a reporter against the world. How could they possibly survive this? The maniacal villain could throw an ego-driven Hail Mary. That's how.
I love this moment because, yes, the heroes are all surrounded by the, like, super techno tanks. Like, they're, like, weird-looking jeeps of the rock soldiers, which those are great. Give me that toy. And Krang calls everybody off to demand. He's like, I have to finish the turtles myself from inside the Technodrome with a big fucking gun.
Yeah, one of those laser cannons that are mounted on the outside of the Technodrome that you never actually saw function before. Suddenly they're relevant.
Like, you thought that he was going to come out in his body and, like, fight them or whatever, like, in the first. No, he's just going to shoot them.
We got our heroes facing down the barrel of a Technodrome gun. All hope is lost. April regrets her life decisions. Leo is giddy with delight because he might die. And then suddenly, Krang runs out of juice. LOL.
Yep.
That's insulting to the good people of the Niagara Power Project.
No, I mean, he ran out of power because the power got cut off too soon. And he used all the auxiliary power coming through the portal.
Naturally.
He had to use all of the power that the Technodrome latently had to go through the portal because the plan of the turtles succeeded and shut down all of New York's electric power.
Just so that they can run out of gas.
Yep. Yeah.
We're at the cusp of a big knockdown dragout brawl, right? Bebop and Rocksteady and the rock soldiers and foot soldiers. We got lasers. We got tree branches falling down. Donnie's voice coming out of Leonardo.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
And then another very head-scratching blimp rope escape instead of a fight.
I mean, I get them wanting to retreat here because the odds were still very much against them. What I don't get is how the hell the glider's back on the blimp.
Was it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I totally skipped over it.
Like, from the moment it flies into picture, the glider is on the blimp, despite going over the singular Niagara Falls that Michael Reeves thinks exists.
Oh my God, you're right. This is right in the same caliber as in the last episode when New York's Shiniest.
When there's two turtle vans?
When there's two turtle vans. Guys, that's insulting to kids.
But don't worry, because it's followed up with the best bit of animation that this show has seen. I do not care what you say. Shredder's aggravated dance of the turtles getting away again is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
14 minutes, 38 seconds. What the fuck? He goes full Jim Carrey and has a complete tantrum. What happens there? What? He stomps around like a 2-year-old who didn't get his apple juice. What happened?
It's like he forgot how to walk, so all of his limbs just do different things at the same time.
Dude, like, we can crack jokes, but, like, that was bad.
I just need a gif of that. Somebody in our audience, please gif that.
They've escaped again! Oh, this is getting very monotonous.
It's only season 2! You shouldn't lampshade yourself like that after the 2nd season.
You're right, but I am also enjoying very much that James Avery, who has been kind of subdued for the past couple of episodes, is finally getting a moment to shine here.
Oh, yeah, it's a great line. Oh, man. We're not even done. There's still more plot. Can you guys believe this? Krang uses the plant to charge the Technodrome because the Turtles and Splinter and April have escaped, so no one is protecting a hydroelectric plant anymore.
Krang's not charging the Technodrome, he's charging the capacitators. And just let me say, every time that he mispronounces a common electrical component like that, my eye twitch increases.
But his plan is just amazing, because he wants to cause a massive earthquake that will empty New York City, so that they can use the city as their base of operations for a full-scale invasion from Dimension X.
Yeah, his plan is to cause seismic disruptions and basically just fuck up everyone's day with earthquakes. I don't know how that makes you rule the world.
Yep. Nope, no idea.
Full disclaimer, apologies if we sound insensitive to the recent tragedy in Turkey.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a cartoon. This is a cartoon.
It is a little bit of just odd timing on when we got to this episode. Obviously, our job here is to talk about the episode, and the episode has an earthquake in it, so we do send our best to everybody dealing with what is a horrific incident. We are not making light of earthquakes.
Not at all. We're aware of the news cycle and the horrors. I just wanted to put that out there, because at the same time, we're publishing a crappy podcast about a silly cartoon, so covering our bases here.
Absolutely.
Krang starts sending out quake after quake as threats. And the waves are, of course, like starting to shake New York, but not destroy anything yet, until Krang has a chance to get his 15 minutes of fame by taking over TV, because obviously the Ninja Turtles just transform and roll out.
Yeah. Well, OK. They're already back in New York City, by the way.
Yes. Good point. Like, this is all in the course of one day, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They fly the blimp all the way back to Manhattan. They're on the ground already to receive the the television appearance of Krang, asking everyone in New York City to get out or he'll flatten every building in the city.
But that's immediately followed by a very dope ass moment from Splinter.
And so begins the final battle.
With a very large asterisk.
Yeah.
So our Ninja Turtles follow underground tunnels to the Technodrome, which is lined with, and I quote, foot-thick titanium armor.
Yep.
And the most Ninja Turtle line that the Ninja Turtles have ever Ninja Turtled. Donatello says,
"Hey, don't sweat it. I've got this gadget I've been saving for just such an occasion."
17 minutes, 8 seconds.
Yep. I do want to call out one line prior to that, because they're searching for the Technodrome, and obviously they find it right away. It's huge. It's digging out giant tunnels underneath the city. But I love Raph being like,
"Well, it's kind of hard to miss. It's only 5 times the size of the Houston Astrodome."
Didn't they previously say it was the size of Citi Field or Met Stadium?
Yeah, in the very first episode with the Technodrome, they compared it to Shea Stadium.
Yeah, so did it grow?
Maybe.
Luckily, Donatello's got an explosive ninja star, which after a little suspense blows a new hole in the Technodrome. That's like 3 or 4 so far between the Turtles and Neutrinos.
I would love if they never get repaired. Just keeps having new holes.
Whoever's got the contractor deal at the Technodrome has really got it made in the shade.
Oh, man, this is our, was it Jay and Silent Bob talking about how many extra contractors were on the Death Star?
Plumbers, aluminum siders, roofers.
Not just Imperials. Is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. In order to get it built quickly and quietly, they'd hire anybody that can do the job. I think the average stormtrooper knows how to install a toilet main. All they know is killing in white uniforms.
Oh, man, As a diehard Kevin Smith fan, I would love to see more crossover with him and Ninja Turtles. Bonus trivia, Kevin Smith did voice the diner chef in TMNT 2K7 CG animated film.
Oh, yeah.
Where are the cops? How come the cops haven't showed up? Just remember what my analyst said. Just go to my happy place and go to my happy place. It'll be fine. Happy place. I'm feeling good. I'm thin. I'm feeling
don't get up. I'll serve myself.
So back to the plot. Splinter is diverting off from the team of the Turtles in April to draw the Shredder away. And then Shredder also has this weird Obi-Wan Darth Vader moment where they sense each other. It's not subtle.
No, not at all.
Somebody clearly had just watched A New Hope.
It's funny because this is 88, right?
I mean, it's a full 10 years late, almost full 10 years late. But yeah, it's clearly like everything from the environments to the animation to the showdown to the dialogue is clearly Star Wars. It's clearly Obi-Wan Darth Vader.
Yep.
Also, why is April still with them?
Right? It is kind of weird. Every other time they've been like pretty big on, hey, April, this is too dangerous for you. You should stay out of here.
It's very obviously framing for like the finale episode to get all of the hero characters on the same page. But like she contributes nothing. Not to be mean. She literally contributes nothing. She just kind of runs in the battle and becomes a liability. She's just in constant danger and like she doesn't fight or hit anything. She just exists.
Yep. She doesn't have her camera either, so she's not really getting footage for her, you know, supposed news story or anything. Just there.
Yeah, guys, I mean, at least like tuck her behind a bush somewhere with the camera or something and make it relevant.
I do want to get a still frame of 18 minutes and 51 seconds. Because say what you want about the Star Wars parallels, this is one badass intro for the quote-unquote fight between Splinter and Shredder, where it's they meet on a bridge overlooking a bottomless pit, and Shredder says, "It appears it is time for our final confrontation." And there's like this red energy wave that kind of lightning strikes next to him, casting this red glow on him. It's pretty cool.
Dude, this is metal as hell. So like in general, this entire scene, everybody's got their backs to the wall. Bebop and Rocksteady have cornered the Ninja Turtles in April. And yeah, like they completely cement this with that atmosphere. But yeah, straight up that Death Star walkway. We got shield generator columns, the red light. It's so fucking metal the way it lit like lights Shredder in the full red silhouette. It's so dope. Like that discharge, very much not OSHA approved, but yeah, it's fucking metal.
Hey, at least this is railings.
So anyway, I says, forget the dental plan, forget sick leave. I just want a railing, you know, one railing right here.
The face-off kicks off when Splinter says, "Hamato Yoshi is no longer. There is only Splinter.
There is no Dana, only Zool."
What a lovely singing voice you must have.
It's such a good intro. Shredder's comeback is great, too.
"And soon he will be gone as well."
Nice!
But seriously, though.
Yeah! Give me more of this, please.
Yo! Where has this writing been? Two massive battles unfolding in front of us, and one of them is just straight up, like, the absolute showdown between the rivals that we've been waiting for. We thought it was in season one. Nah, bro. This is it. And, oh no, the Ninja Turtles knock the lights out and escape from Bebop and Rocksteady before the army of soldiers can get to them, and they just tie them all up, and that was a budget animation decision.
Yeah, and Donnie rewires the Technodrome to disrupt Krang's plan. I gotta call out Krang's line here too.
"Those foolish citizens refuse to evacuate. Then it's time to really shake them off."
Dude, there are 6 million people in Manhattan. You gave them 5 minutes.
I mean, if we learned anything from The Dark Knight Rises. Yeah, I'm a little disappointed in this part though. Like the fight is okay, but they really set it up to be like the end of all things, and it could be so fucking badass. And honestly, the only thing I'm really here for at this point is that Splinter Shredder showdown. The rest of it, I really don't care about.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're saying the fight here. What fight? Like, Leo monkey flips Rocksteady into a panel, which turns the lights out, and they're gone. And then the quote-unquote fight between Shredder and Splinter is just like It doesn't happen.
There's a few hits, but yeah, it kind of falls flat. They don't really go anywhere with it. Destruction starts happening. The Technodrome is shaking itself apart because apparently Krang hit the reverse button on the Earthquake Maker. So the entire Technodrome just kind of starts to shake itself into the core of the Earth. Yeah, and then Splinter escapes in the 11th hour. Honest to God, I thought for a second there, because Splinter was still inside facing off a Shredder and the bridge collapses, that as the Turtles and April escape, that this was going to be a setup for season three. Like, oh, shoot, did I forget a story arc where Splinter goes missing or they have to go rescue him?
Yeah.
No, he's fine. He gets out. No big deal.
It did look for a second like there was going to be setting up a story of, again, what the beginning of the episode starts off with. Like, what would the Turtles do without Splinter? And, man, that would be, like, what we talked about in the beginning of the episode would be really great foreshadowing if he didn't make it out of the Technodrome. But, yeah, of course, he does. And it's like the bridge they're standing on collapses in the middle. Splinter, because he's a rat, climbs right out without any real hesitancy. Shredder gets caught on a railing on his cape. His cape gets caught on a railing that broke, that he wasn't close to the railing at all. And the railing's also facing down, so he really should have just slipped off into the massive hole in the ground, but he didn't. So cool. I guess that's fine.
He's just having another tantrum, swinging his arms.
Yep. Like, seriously, look at the animation that they chose for him not dying in this moment. How does this work?
Yeah, there's something very wrong with that handrail that he's supposed to be hanging off of. Yeah, he should absolutely have slipped off that physics.
Never mind that it's his cape too, so he's getting choked out right now.
And they just leave him there. They just leave him there.
That's such a disappointment. That's such an awesome setup for a fight, and then it just doesn't happen.
No, because they're way more concerned with showing us the Technodrome sinking into the Earth's core, like completely submerged in magma.
Yeah, that. Just going to point out that the Technodrome falling into the core of the Earth wouldn't be good for anyone.
No, aren't we in the middle of like a situation where the Earth's core has either reversed or stopped spinning or something like that? Like, did you have that on your bingo card for 2023 devastation?
Nope.
We cut to the epilogue and pizza in the lair. Time to party hardy. And then April credits half teenagers, half turtles, not to mention a half man, half rat, to defeating the villains of the day. And then we get a great, legitimately great finishing line for the season as April observes that she is the only human amongst them. 100%. And Mikey says,
"Well, don't feel bad, April. Nobody's perfect."
Wow. I gotta ask a question.
Yeah, hit me.
What is a half teenager?
I mean, she's saying it's,
she says it, four half teenagers. What does that mean? Are they seven?
Yeah, you're right. So I want to throw it away to semantics, but you're right. That doesn't work at all.
Like, I get what they were trying to do with being like, oh, April's the only whole person here. Isn't that funny? But like, what is a half teenager?
Yeah, all right. I got no response to that. You're right. This was a fun one, though. It feels weird that we're already at the end of season two.
That it does. Especially after an episode that its pace was so off the walls. It's so bonkers. And the episode ends really abruptly.
Yeah, so much of that has been kind of like the mission statement going forward, like just squeeze as much action and comedy into one place, because this is another one. Like, okay, we always talk about the moral and looking back at these shows 30 years after we were children observing them for the first time and if they hold up and if there's something to be learned.
Yeah.
But this is another one where it's like, okay, I thought this was going to be a case where Splinter is MIA. Either he has gone on his sabbatical, or he gets yanked away to Dimension X with the Technodrome or something, or plunged into the Earth's core. But no, like, it's not a believe in yourself episode. It's just another episode.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably like the biggest thing to say about it, is that it does set itself up. I feel like it creates stakes for the end of the season. Like, it does a good job in being like, oh man, we're going to pull out all the punches because it's the end of the season. But it doesn't pay off on those things in an interesting way. It just kind of does.
It's the same grand finale we had last season.
Yeah.
That being said, I still very much enjoyed this. I by default, I'm calling this a cowabunga just because the stakes were so high, even though the execution was a little flawed. I was excited to see Krang be involved again. How do you feel?
I mean, I think I'd put it at an excellent tops for me.
Oh,
I really liked it. I had a good time. But I also spent 60% of the episode with my head in my hands being like, what is geography?
I can't believe I'm a little more forgiving than you on this one. I mean, I hear your argument and I do agree with it to a large point, but it's still like, it's a season finale. I got to give it a bonus point.
It's big and it's a good episode. It is a solidly good episode. I do not want to take away from how enjoyable it is. But as a kid, would I care about any of that stuff? Absolutely not. Like, as a kid, cowabunga through and through. As an adult going back and watching it, I couldn't wrap my head around it. And probably because, like, I've lived in New York my whole life. I have been to Niagara Falls several times. I have family in Western New York. I've got friends who are from Western New York. We have this sort of weird situation where, like, I was from Long Island, New York City, and moved to Western New York, and you were from Western New York and moved to New York City. So there's just this, like, element of me as a New Yorker that's like, what the F is this? This is insane.
Fair. I'm still sticking to my guns, though. Bonus point for simply being the end of the season, as flawed as it was.
I can give you a real reason why I would give the bonus point and then take it away, and it has everything to do with that non-fight between Splinter and Shredder.
But the dialogue setup was good. It's just blue balls.
Exactly. I give them a point for the setup. The setup is golden and should be in, like, every Ninja Turtles iteration moving forward. Like, it is golden. But I want to see that fight afterwards, and they don't do it. They like scapegoat out of it.
They're dangling the carrot because they knew that they were going to get an order for another 47 episodes.
Yeah, I guess so.
Could you imagine Splinter just throwing Shredder over the railing and him Emperor Palpatine down into, like, the core of the Technodrome?
Yeah, I mean, like, what would it be like if the franchise started with its main villain getting blown up or something like that? That'd be crazy.
I don't know. Ask Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird.
Exactly. Layers thick of sarcasm.
All right, so no sincere moral on this one. It's just kind of a fun one, just for the sake of the action and semi-concluding a partial storyline. We're gonna diverge on our rating. I'm sticking with Cowabunga. You're an excellent. Either way, it's a good, not great. Before we get to our affirmation this week, we wanted to announce that at the end of season two, we're gonna take a brief hiatus. We're gonna break for a week, just so we can catch our breath and then resume with the absolute onslaught that is season three, 47 half-assed episodes that introduce some really incredible supporting characters from Leatherhead to the Rat King to Casey fucking Jones.
Yeah, we're finally getting there, folks.
We'll plow through it, but we're going to catch our breath. We'll see you again on March 9th. We'll resume publishing, so enjoy a week off. In the meantime, we bring you our weekly affirmation, pizza affirmation. And Alexander the Great once said, "There is nothing impossible to him who will try a pie." Take care, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Cowabunga. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Bye.
Deuteronomy is produced by Brian Van Gelder and me, Dan Spitaleri. Brian edits and mixes the show and also designed our show art. Our theme music is composed by Mario Cello Nunez. You can hear more of his music on Spotify, which we've linked to in the show notes. Find us on Twitter at Deuteronomy_TMNT and send email to deuteronomy.tmnt@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Cowabunga!
Oh, what do we do now?
Well, we can always pray for a meteor to strike.